Shalom Aleichem to all who are tuning in to the Interpreter's Pulpit 101 podcast. This is Les Aaron Gosling teaching nothing new, but all things original. I've entitled this podcast Uncomfortable Truth, why the seventh commandment is repeated in the tenth. And this is part one. But in this podcast, it is our contention that modern fundamentalist Christian sects today, and for that matter, Christendom at large, do not comprehend what adultery is. Adultery, of course, in Hebrew, niuf. Some cherish a view that adultery and fornication were equal sins in the eyes of the Mosaic Lord, and that as such they both deserve the death penalty under the Sinai Covenant administration. Nothing, of course, could be further from the truth. While adultery was dealt with swiftly by the death penalty, as it is also carried out in certain backward Arab nations today, the act of sex prior to marriage, if established beyond doubt, exacted only a monetary penalty made out in the name of the girl's father. You can check that out in Deuteronomy 22 verse 29 and Exodus 22:17. In those days, the ancients considered daughters, like their mothers, as part and parcel of their material property. Even the hallowed Ten Commandments, called by the Apostle Paul in Romans 7:12, holy, just, and good, were imperfect where the woman of the house was concerned. Indeed, if we notice carefully the wording of the Fourth Commandment concerning the Shabbat rest, the wife is ignored altogether in Exodus 20, verses 8 to 10. That the issue of fornication is often understood to mean premarital sexual expression revolves around the meaning of the Greek word porneia. Yet most scholars today realize this word, in most cases where it appears in the New Testament text, means temple or sacred prostitution, not necessarily sexual promiscuity before marriage. Now, we're not advocating premarital sex, only being honest with the biblical text. For, in first century Jewish thought form, a man and a woman who were betrothed, that's engaged, to each other were, for all intents and purposes, legally married. There is even textual evidence in the Messianic scriptures that testify to this assertion. Note that before Miriam and Joseph were married, they were called wife and husband by the very angel of God and the scribe Matthew Levi, one of the disciples of our Lord. Check it out in Matthew chapter 1, 18 to 20, and also verse 24 and verse 25. Note also that even though they were only engaged, a divorce was necessary to sever their relationship, Matthew 1:19. Could anything be plainer? But let's attempt to make the issue crystal clear. It is our belief that adultery, in its original intent, had little, if anything, to do with even a sexual offence committed by another against the mutually acknowledged bounds of a marriage union. In its original essence, the seventh commandment carried the meaning, do not break down the genetic structure of your race by miscegenation. Now, I'll have a little more to say in our very next podcast to amplify this position. In the meantime, in Earth's earliest ages, even the patriarchs understood this principle. One of the fundamental reasons God destroyed the planet by a deluge in the days of Noah involved this sin. Only Noah was perfect in his generations, it says in Genesis 6 and verse 9. This word perfect comes from the Hebrew tomim, meaning bodily perfection, not moral perfection, as it is used for those who would object. A total of 46 times of sacrificial animals, which, as any student of the word knows, had to be without physical degeneration or defect. As to a commandment actually protecting a Hebrew wife, we ought to look not in the seventh Mosaic pronouncement, but in the tenth, which states in Exodus 20:17, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. And so a specific requirement centered in the seventh commandment was not only unnecessary, but was woefully redundant. but most unbelieving believers miss this fact entirely. Again, in the 10th pronouncement, or the 10th word if you wish, the poor wife runs a second to her husband owner's house or tent. In Exodus 20:17, you'll find that. Of course, the list in Deuteronomy chapter 5 puts the order a little differently, showing a clear case of editing by Ezra the scribe after the Babylonian captivity. Most certainly, Ezra dramatically updated the original Torah to better suit the needs of the current social and religious environment in which he lived. Ezra was none other than Malachi, the prophet of God. Malachi is a title, not a personal name, and was inducted to edit the ancient manuscripts of the Jews, choosing some from here and rejecting others from there, for the ultimate purpose of creating a canon. Whatever did happen to the books of the wars and the book of Jasher and all the others? Even a little bird listening to this is quite instrumental in praising the living God, as we are trying to do in this podcast. But that he generally updated the Ten Commandments to better avail the unavoidable processes of turbulent social and environmental change witnessed by the Jewish people over a stretch of more than a millennium, as well as destroying certain other volumes, now of enormous historical interest to us, in order to conform more adequately to the pattern of existing social evolution, is attested to by all but fundamentalist authorities. Well, such an observable evaluation is absolutely unavoidable, in my opinion. But a close look at the word adultery reveals that it carries within it the seeds of its genesis, or genesis, if you wish, in our vocabulary. A cursory glimpse in any standard dictionary under adulterate, adulteration, and adultery will be an interesting excursion for all students of the biblical revelation. To be sure, adultery came to mean, over the broad span of centuries, that an act of procreation in another man's wife had taken place or had been attempted. That is, the child of the woman that was now being carried was not her husband's. Someone else's genes were now in the family, and naturally this was frowned upon. The Ten Commandments did not, however, protect foreign interests. Let me announce something that will be very disquieting for some of our listeners. But, dear brethren, it is the plain truth of the matter. It is this. Only Hebrews were protected by the regulations of the Torah. Now listen. Listen carefully. If an Israelite expedition invaded a foreign territory and women were seized and taken as spoils of war, right of conquest by the chosen people would apply. There was no adultery here. Too bad for the poor Canaanite husband who pined for his captured wife. Tough luck for the children who never saw their mother again. The champion of Israel, according to his requirements of law, had to look up after the wench with all the privileges Israel afforded to a Jewish woman, and, you know, they weren't that many. In view of the foregoing, Paul's assessment of the Ten Commandments in Romans 7:12 as holy, just, and good is all a matter of where you're coming from. That a law against miscegenation was the intent of the seventh commandment more fully explains why Moses' own household reacted so violently when he revealed he was married to an Ethiopian princess, the African black woman Darbus. Numbers 12. Josephus records this in Antiquities 11:10-2. You can look it up yourself. Aaron and Miriam found his sexual behavior difficult to come to terms with in view of the law against racial intermarriage. But community social ethics change over the years. Compare the liberal sexual attitudes displayed by Abraham and his sons in Genesis 12:10-20, Genesis 20 verses 1-18, and Genesis 26 verses 6-11. By the period of the prophets, if not before, interracial marriage was discouraged only for religious reasons. Incest was still frowned on, rightly so. But had Abraham, the father of the faithful, lived in the days of Moses, he would have met a swift and terrifying end by being stoned to death for having married his half-sister. Genesis 20 verse 12, Leviticus 20:17. But New Testament times, racial marriage was considered acceptable. And the primitive Yeshua-oriented messianic community in Judea insisted upon the circumcision rite before Gentiles could become aligned with and full members of the authentic remnant Israel of God. It ought to be recognized that Christians in the early ecclesia, the early community of faith, were, under Paul's pastoral administration, considered free and at liberty to take a wife of the same faith, even if she was of another color and nationality. You'll find that in Galatians 3:26-29. Note special reference in verse 28. For such a major theological, racial, social, and cultural breakthrough, we can all thank the Apostle Paul, arguably the most misunderstood writer when it comes to his considerations on sexual morality, among other things. Even Paul, well versed in matters pertaining to legal factors, would not speak out against polygamous unions. After all, his God was pictured by the prophet Ezekiel as symbolically having taken two wives at the same time. You'll find that in Ezekiel chapter 23. Additionally, the Lord Yeshua spoke of his second advent to married 10 virgins, 10 brides awaiting him, not 10 bridesmaids, as so often erroneously stated. Perchance we ought not to be too hard on the Israelites of old time. Their Torah also allowed free sexual expression with captive women of surrounding Gentile nations, as we have already taken pains to point out, and there was no prohibition against extramarital relations conducted with Gentiles for either sex, as startling as this verse sounds. If you can get hold of a copy of Human Sexuality, New Directions in Catholic Thought, a study commissioned by the Catholic Theological Society of America back in 1977 that came out, you will be quite surprised how the Catholics are now admitting the truth of the matter. In my very next podcast, we shall take a deeper look at the commandment against adultery. Be prepared for even more uneasy revelations of Yehovah God in his very own scriptures, concerning which I am perfectly at liberty to elucidate and evince. Stay tuned in order to unlock the secrets of the Bible, solve the mysteries of the biblical revelation, explore the astonishing realms of infinite intelligence, enjoy the advancement you will attain as a spiritual being having a human experience in this material world. We invite you to traverse the contents of this ancient book we call the Holy Bible to gain a unique insight into the Jewish scriptures. If you are tuning in to the Interpreter's Pulpit 101 podcast for any of these reasons, welcome indeed. It's high time to restore all things, and we thank you for allowing us to serve you in this manner. This is Les Aaron Gosling saying, Kol Tov to all who love the Lord Yeshua.